Fergus McCann's takeover of Celtic took place. It ensured a huge change in the direction of the club, and it laid the foundations that have led to 21st century dominance. This is the story of those events. In order to truly understand how Celtic's 1994 takeover came about, it's necessary to first go back more than a century beforehand. The origins of the club are well known, established by an Irish Maris brother to help feed the poor children of Glasgow's East End. But there's more to the story than this. Very early in the boys' history, there emerged a split between those who wanted a charitable focus and those who believed Celtic needed much greater business expertise. The renowned club historians Pat Woods and Tom Campbell describe this as the battle for Celtic's soul. There were various attempts to turn the club from a member-owned organisation to a private company with shareholders. Finally, in 1897, this happened, and Celtic became a private limited company. It led to 5,000 shares being issued at a cost of £1 each. This began to concentrate ownership of the club into a smaller group, which in the end would lead to the rise of Celtic's dynasties, families who controlled the club across generations. Some names associated with 1897 stand out when studying the events of 1994. Most notable is James Kelly, Celtic's first captain and a man who went on to become club chairman too. His name was amongst the first shareholders, and his descendants, Michael and Kevin, were both on Celtic's board in 1994. In addition, the 1897 share issue led to James Grant, a Belfast-born wine merchant, becoming the club's largest shareholder. His great-grandson, Tom, was also part of the 1994 board. Although there were other share issues up to 1919, by 1994, the shares largely remained concentrated in the hands of a small group of families. When they did change hands, it was generally kept within the bloodline for very low rates. In the early 1990s, Celtic shares sold privately for around £3, but by the time of the takeover, £350 was a more common figure. By the early 90s, Celtic were a club in dire need of change and improvement. The stadium was crumbling and debts were rising. Worst of all, the on-field football was terrible. From 1989 to 1995, the Celts failed to win any silverware. They struggled even to be runners-up in the league, regularly finishing as far down the table as 4th or 5th. The dominance of Rangers in this era did not improve the mood amongst supporters. All attempts to rectify the off-field situation failed. New blood was brought onto the board, such as Michael Kelly and Brian Dempsey, but this often led to more acrimony and argument. And attempts by outsiders to offer investment, including Fergus McCann, were rebuffed. In 1992-93, the club borrowed more money than it had previously done in its entire history, with little value being shown for this. And with the club's growing debt, there seemed to be little hope on the horizon. There was also another huge problem coming Celtic's way. The 1989 Liverpool tragedy at Hillsborough had led to a requirement to have an all-seated stadium, and the boys had no fixed plan to achieve this. The fans were not prepared to accept this situation. Protest groups were formed, starting with Save Our Celts in 1991. They took part in different protests alongside other unofficial actions, not least the singing of Sack the Board that would echo around an increasingly empty Celtic Park. For Celtic fans, the solution to all of this was clear. An entirely new board was needed that could attract new expertise and, more importantly, finance. As well as the ordinary supporters, rich businessmen wanted change too. Notably, this included Fergus McCann and Gerald Weisfeld, but it also involved men such as Brian Dempsey, John Keane and Willie Hawkey. It was evident to the rebels, as those opposed to the current board came to be known, that the key to controlling Celtic lay with the club's shares. These had first been issued in 1897 and were largely in control of the small group of families and individuals. The various prospective leaders of Celtic took different approaches into how they would achieve change. Some tried direct negotiation with the Celtic board, offering to buy their shares, which would in turn give them ownership of the Hoops. Others targeted smaller shareholders around the world as a means of gaining a foothold into the club. This entailed journeys all across the globe, often speaking to people who owned shares purely because of a great ancestor they'd never met and rarely thought about. These shares were found in Canada, America, Ireland, and numerous other countries. In fact, David Lowe, a Rebels advisor, described a meeting held in a cow shed in Ireland where he tried to buy shares. All of these efforts succeeded in giving the rebel groups a sizable Celtic ownership, but not enough to enact the changes they wanted. This is not to say that all was well with the board. In fact, they were being driven apart by factionalism and arguments. This was so much the case that in March 1992, an extraordinary general meeting, or EGM, was called by some members of the board. Its aim was to remove two other board members, Tom Grant and James Farrell. This failed, and eventually, in fact, made it even harder for the rebels to gain control of Celtic. Following this EGM, an apparent outbreak of unity gripped the Celtic board. Five of the club's directors and main shareholders agreed a pact to unite their shares. This involved Kevin Kelly, Michael Kelly, Chris White, Tom Grant, and David Smith. It meant no one could sell their shares to people such as McCann, or vote against any move that would dilute the board's control. The Celtic family still believed they could shape Celtic's destiny, and in April 1992 announced an initiative that they claimed would transform the boys and build, quite literally, a 21st century club. Plans were announced for their own Field of Dreams, a new stadium at Cambus Lang that would see Celtic move onto what would have been the third Celtic Park. The rebels' next action was to try and force a new share issue. They believed that this would raise the significant investment the club needed and also end the family dynasty's control of Celtic. Planning meetings took place in unusual places, including the Casey Jones Burgers in Queen Street Station. In November 1993, another EGM was called, this time to vote on a motion to set up a new share issue. The Celtic board, especially the Gang of Five, would not allow such an action. Even any individual amongst them who wanted to do so was prevented by the legal pact they'd signed. Quite simply, the rebel plan was destined to fail. If there was to be change at Celtic, it would have to be driven by other factors. And in this regard, the fans stepped forward. The Bank of Scotland eventually played a substantial role too, as would one Celtic player, entirely inadvertently. The campaign group Save Our Celts had enjoyed some early success and attracted publicity, but its influence soon waned. In its place, in September 1993, came Celts for Change, which had the aim of giving substantial voice to growing fan anger. They participated in different activities, such as leaflet drops, protest marches, and rallies. All of this created a lot of noise and publicity, but it still didn't remove the board from power. This certainly made the fans unhappy, and it also caused huge concerns for another powerful organisation. By March of 1994, the Bank of Scotland was very unhappy, unsure of how Celtic could possibly pay back the club's debt. And the rejection of a share issue which might have achieved this had not pleased the boys' financial backers. Disaster then occurred owing to a recent Celtic signing. Willie Faulkner had arrived at the club in February 1994. Later that month, Celtic were due to pay an instalment of his transfer fee to Sheffield United. However, in doing so, this took Celtic over their agreed overdraft limit. Now the bank acted. At first, they asked the club's directors for personal guarantees, which these Celtic men could simply not afford to do. And then things got even worse for the board. Firstly, the funding package they'd said was secured to pay for Cambus Lang was shown to be non-existent. The bank, Gefinor, denied any formal involvement or agreement. And a Celtic versus Kilmarnock match was affected by a huge fan boycott, which saw fewer than 9,000 people in Celtic Park. The bank now spoke to various potential Celtic funders that could provide the money which was needed. At this point, Fergus McCann and John Keane stepped back into the story. Financial guarantees were sought with strict deadlines. In simple terms, £1 million was needed straight away to stop Celtic going into receivership, which John Keane provided. Fergus McCann then flew from his North American home to Scotland. The Bank of Scotland had set various deadlines, and by the 12th noon on Friday 4th of March 1994, Celtic faced the prospect of being wound up. McCann arrived in Scotland and went to his bank before quickly making his way up St Vincent Street to the Bank of Scotland. At 11:52am, just 8 minutes short of the decision that could have been taken to end Celtic's illustrious history, a deal was reached to save the club. However, This didn't give McCann or his group control of Celtic, which meant the next scene of battle moved to Celtic Park. As the Scots-Canadian arrived at the ground, fans were already starting to gather to celebrate the change they had long hoped to see. But in fact, things weren't as simple as this. There still had to be work done to persuade the major shareholders to hand over control. At this point, the rebels fell into disputes. Some believed it important to strike a quick deal and pay the old board what they wanted. However, Fergus McCann is said to have argued that not one fin dime should go to the men whose actions had laid Celtic so low. It was a sentiment the fans would certainly understand. The alternative was that the rebels could allow the Bank of Scotland to call on the receivers. At that point, ownership of Celtic could be secured for a far lower price than would otherwise be the case. But equally, this would have been a huge embarrassment to the club's fine history. McCann, under pressure from Brian Dempsey and others, eventually agreed to buy the required shares that would give him and others control. Following this, all that remained was to tell the fans. As the old board were safely escorted from the ground, Brian Dempsey stood at the main stand steps and famously announced, "The game is over, the rebels have won." In terms of the takeover, the battle was indeed over, although the formal deal to transfer shares to McCann's group was not actually completed for another week. However, this was only the start of the journey to rebuild Celtic. It was an often rocky and acrimonious road, and Celtic saviour Fergus McCann did not always retain this initial popularity. Later events, especially the liquidation at Ibrox, would ultimately prove McCann's approach to be correct. As the Celts bask in 21st century dominance in Scotland, sitting in the midst of a modern stadium, the biggest football ground in the country, the legacy and importance of that 1994 takeover has never been more obvious. If you want to learn more about Celtic history, follow Hail Hail History on Twitter, X and Blue Sky. You can also take part in free Celtic walking tours. Visit celticwalkingtours.wordpress.com for more information.